hour, which will start not at 6:15, but 6:05. There will be a demonstration as to how to build the simulation model that I showed you. And we will come back to that later. So as to the lecture, so as I said, we will develop this model later, which is fully documented also in Fronter. There is actual a document telling you how to build the model with all the details, and that includes the things that I showed you in the Venzi model just before closing the previous lecture. So finally, concerning behavior, there is another pattern that comes quite often, which is called overshoot and collapse. And that is when you have a resource that is being used up, like for instance overfishing, when there is not enough fish to sustain the normal reproduction. This has happened, for instance, in I think it was in the 70s or in the 80s, Canadian ships fishing in the Newfoundland caught that much cod that the cod, which was similar to the skrei, it was a cod that was moving to the Arctic and coming back, virtually disappeared. Other examples is animals overfeeding on pasture, but also in business and society, we have seen companies that grow and then collapse. A famous example was People Express, the first attempt to create a low-fare aircraft line company, and it grew very rapidly and then collapsed because they were not prepared for that much of success. And you could probably find similar examples concerning security. So spend some time thinking. All these things are good for learning. So summarizing now, we use causal diagrams and maps for quickly sketching ideas of working with a user, with a client who is not familiar with stock and flows, and to communicate important feedback loops. But we must be careful not to go too far, because as I have emphasized several times, causal loop diagrams, they simplify the issue a lot, to the point that sometimes you have similar causal loops and the behavior in reality can be different depending on that. We will see examples of that later. So then you should build simulation models. This said, in some situations with archetypes, you can extract much information if you use common sense when explaining the archetypes. Okay. So in this course, there is a chapter on system archetypes where I explain these archetypes, but we have already have them before. So we jump now to the chapter 9, units in Venzim. Okay, let me find it. Should be slide 72. Yes. So I have already told you a little bit about the units when you build simulation models. And they are useful because unit consistency makes the model easier to understand, and it gives you also some control. By the way, let's go to Venzim. And you have under model a unit check. So click on that. Then you get an answer as to whether the units A-OK means are all OK or not. And you have also a check of the model. Model. Check model. Model is okay. That means there are no mistakes that Vinci knows about. And make a habit to check your model for unit consistency and completeness, because the Vinci will help you and tell you what is wrong. Okay. So, as you have seen before, there is an entry to put the units. The window you are seeing here is different from now. It is organized a bit differently. This belongs to a previous version of Vensim. But in principle, you have the entry units, and that's where you define units. If the units relate to a quantity that is a variable that is computed, then it is enough to press some unit check, and then Vensim will do that for you. You have also units that are dimensionless, and they are shown in Vensim either with D, M, and L, or with 1. So, for instance, in our model for the virus infection, the probability of infection has no units, and therefore you can put D, M, and L, or just simply 1. Another example here, proportion of uninfected pieces is computed as a quotient of two quantities that have the same unit. It's computed as uninfected pieces divided by the total number of pieces. Both have the same unit, so when you click on check unit, it puts 1 here, which is the same as dimensionless. You will see that this is correct, because if I put there this alternative here, okay, and now I click on model unit check, you will see Vensim accepts this. The units are okay. So either 1 or DMNL, dimensionless, you can use to represent dimensionless units. The other thing that is important is to remember that when you are dealing with flows and stocks, the flow units are always computed as the units of the stock or the level divided by the time. Here you see an example where you are considering capacity of a process, and you increase the capacity by some way, generate that, or build capacity. But capacity over time decreases. If capacity is production capacity, this is related to the processes that you have. And this includes also the machines that you use to produce production. So over time, the processes and the machines become less and less good, and you have to replace that. So, for instance, if you are thinking of the capacity of intrusion detection systems, and the unit should be IDS, whatever it means, then the flows will have EIDS divided by time, which could be months or weeks, depending on what you choose. Okay. Here you have some other quantities that occur in the model, and they will be computed by Vensim to the extent that they are computable. If you like, you can build such a model with these units and see what happens. Now, a reflection. Let's look again at the question of capacity. We could measure that in different ways, and one possibility of describing the capacity of an intrusion detection system would be by describing that in the number of incidents per month that the system could detect. So you have a stock capacity, and it has the unit incidents divided by month, which you normally associate with flows, but that's okay. But then the flows will be the unit of the level divided by time, so it will be incidents per month divided per month, both for new capacity and capacity depreciation. Then VenSim will still simulate a model even if it doesn't have the right units. So the check of units with VenSim is to help ensure that you are thinking correctly. But you can make a mistake in the units and still the models be okay to simulate. So if there is not unit consistency, it doesn't mean necessarily that the model is wrong. Some other tools like PowerSim demand that the units are correct, otherwise your model is not accepted. So PowerSim is more strict. Personally, I would prefer that VenSim was stricter, like PowerSim, because demanding that the units are correct means forcing you to think deeper about the way you are modeling. But at least VenSim tells you if the units are consistent. The difference between VenSim and PowerSim is that in VenSim you get an alert, but the alert doesn't prohibit you to simulate. Whereas in PowerSim, if it tells you the units are not correct, then you have to correct that before you can simulate the model. If you have unit inconsistency, then you will get a report like this. And it will alert you as to where the problems are, and that helps you correct that. Sometimes the incorrect units may be due because you have forgot to put some units somewhere, or you put the wrong unit somewhere. But sometimes the inconsistency of units relate to some problems in the model that goes beyond the units. That is, you have done some mistake that is serious and needs to be corrected. So that's why I suggest always check for unit consistency. Make a practice of having the right units. Now as to simulation time. In VenSim, you had typically a simulation time horizon that goes from zero, when the simulation starts, to some final time. There are, I think, in advanced versions of VenSim, the possibility of put calendar date as well. But you don't need to think about that. In PowerSim, that's part of the standard tool. So you can select, in fact, different kinds of calendars, depending, because in addition to the exact calendar of 365 days and 6 hours and something, you have approximate calendars, so you divide the year, say, by 360, and you have not exact days, but something that comes relatively close to days. This all has advantages and disadvantages. So the real calendar is a little bit messy, because a year doesn't have an exact number of days. It has actually a year is 365 days plus approximately one quarter of a day. That's the reason why we have leap years. This year is a leap year. So we have the 29th of February. Well, anyhow, we don't need these complications. You set some initial time as zero normally. You don't change that normally. Then you put some final time that is convenient. You should think as to what is the interesting time horizon. It should cover everything that is interesting for the questions that you ask the model, and not longer, because otherwise nothing happens, not shorter, because otherwise you miss information. And then, as I said before, the time step, which is connected to the unit of time, tells you how often intermediate results that are calculated. So if you have time step 1 and units month, then every month will be something calculated. If you have time step 1 and day, every day something is computed, simulation day, of course. If you use minutes and put time step 1, then one every simulation minute, the results will be computed. What you can say is that the time step is equal to the time horizon, the simulation period, divided by how many times the computation is done. And obviously, the more computations you do, the more accurate the result is, meaning that the smaller the time step is, the more accurate the results of the simulations are. Okay, so that must do units. That's not too difficult. Now, the next one is about how to choose the right simulation algorithm. And this relates to also to how to choose the right time step. But you will also learn here that there are different numerical mathematical methods to compute the simulation. Normally, the Euler method that you see here is good enough. But there are occasions when the Euler method is not good enough, and then you choose more advanced methods for computation. The Euler method is a very simple, intuitively easy to understand, whereas more accurate methods, they need more mathematical knowledge. So I am not going to prove them or derive them, but rather tell you about them and refer to treatises on numerical mathematics for if you want to learn more about them. And then we will also compare what Wenzing is doing with what calculus will do. Well, in principle, there are many tools that you could use to simulate. You could do that with Excel. But if you try to use Excel for that, then you will get an answer from Excel when you try to compute feedback. It will say this is an invalid circular definition. Whereas if you are using VenSim or PowerSim or the others, you can compute feedback because that's built in into the tool. But feedback means that you are all the time progressing over time. So feedback, suppose you have a variable here, you get impact on the same variable after some time, and then again after some time. So that's why it is not circular. You are not trying to define a variable ultimately by itself, but you are getting a computation of a variable using information of the value of that variable in the past. So suppose you wanted to simulate using some spreadsheet tool like Excel. You could do that by computing your bank balance. So suppose you have at year 2000, $1,000, and the interest rate is 5%, then at the end of the year you have $50 more that are added, then at the end of 2001, it computes the interest of 2050, and this is 52 and all. This is added at the end of the year, 5% more, and so on and so on. So this can you can do with a spreadsheet. But as you see, there are a lot of intermediate computations that you have to do. And that's okay for the bank balance. You could do that. By the way, there are special Excel spreadsheet that you could use for that, so you can spare the work. But basically, that's what they do. So you have to repeat the structure for each time step. And that will be very inaccurate if you have systems that are changing faster as to the balance of your account. That's given by the bank. The bank doesn't give you interest every day. Simply it computes the interest at the end of the year. So that's why they don't need to do computations all the time. That is, you have if you have some debt, a mortgage, and you are paying by months, then surely the bank is computing the part of the interest that corresponds for every month. And if you pay back something every month, then you have less debt to the next month, meaning that your interest decreases a bit. That does depend on the kind of mortgage that you have. If you have an annuity, then the interests are computed differently. So this is more for mortgage, which in Norwegian is called serielån, as compared to the annuity. So in the serielån, you are paying interest that correspond exactly to how much debt you have. So that will be similar calculation. Now, basically, the computation that you have using Excel is something like this. If you do that with Vensim, the model is like that. You just put here the balance as a stock, the interest as a flow, and Vensim computes for you, and there you see the results for the balance computed at time 0, 1, 2, and so on and so on. So you have a very simple model, and Vensim does all the calculations for you. Yeah? The interest rate is the question, what is this as compared to the interest? The interest rate is the rate defined by the bank, how much they pay you in percentage when you have there. So, for instance, you know, your bank says, I give you 2% or 3% or whatever. So that's what is the interest rate is. The interest is the computed interest, and that depends on the balance that you have, how much money you have in your account, and the interest rate. If the interest rate changes over the years, then you have to make a different model and put in that. And this can be done as well. There are several ways of doing that. I can show you later how you can do that. Here we assume that the interest rate is a fixed number. Okay? So you have a common structure for all system states if you use a system dynamics model. The results are generated by simulation, and they can be displayed in a table or in a curve. Now, again, a reminder, which I made this morning. When you have a system dynamics model, the essential information, so to speak, the memory of the model, is always in the levels. And you can now work through this model here and see how it happens. If you know the values of the stocks, customers and potential customers, from that you can compute the potential customer ratio from this, and customers, customers, potential customers, Yes, indirectly yes, because the customers compute the market size, and the market size enters here. So customers and potential customers determine the potential customer race. From customers, you compute the repurchase rate here. And from then, a new customers, you compute the total sales. So if you walk through the model, then you can see how from the stocks, the values in the stocks, everything else can be computed. Everything that is not constant. Now, how is this simulation done? Going back to the simple model of the savings and the interest, and the interest rate. Suppose you have this model, and we have initially 100 here, and we have a flow where it's computed by adding to the savings the interest multiplied by the time step, and the interest is computed as the savings times the interest rate, and we put the interest rate 10%, that will be luxurious. Normally this doesn't happen. So the simulation algorithm is always like this. For a given time, step one, compute the initial values of the level, this one. Then compute the values of the flows in the model. In this case, there is one only. Then, depending on whether the flow enters the level or leaves the level, then you add or subtract the flows from the levels. And then point four, advance the time by a time step, go to step two, and do it again and again. So here is the result. Here we have the results for the time, the savings, and the interest. Time zero, calculate the initial level values. It's 100. Two, calculate the flows in the model, that is the interest, and you get it by multiplying the savings with the interest rate. So it's 10. 100 multiplied by 10% is 10. Then step three, add or subtract the flows from the levels. Here it's done. It computes, adds 10 to 100, and you have 110. And then go to step two, calculate the flows in the model, that is this here, that is 11. Advance the time to two and do it again. To three and do it again. To four and do it again. To fifth and do it again. And so on. So the procedure is always the same. This is a simple model, but in more complex models, it's exactly the same procedure. Calculate all the initial values for all the levels. Calculate all the flows in the model. The flows that enter in the levels add to the level. The flows that go out from the level subtract the value of the level. Then you add the time by a time step and go back to time two, to step two. Calculate the flows. Add or subtract the flows, advance the time, calculate the flows, add then or subtract then, calculate all the flows, and so on, for a new time. So the time step is the interval between the calculations. If you look now at this model, then let's do an experiment, which is, of course, nonsensical, because the interests are never computed every 20 years, or every 10 years, or every 5 years. Actually, the bank does it for 1 year. But for the purpose of understanding how simulation works, let's do that. So if you simulate it with a time step of 20 years, then you will get a red curve. You have 100 today, and you will have 120. You will have some other results after 20 years. So you have an interest rate of 100. So after 20 years, you will be up into 300, 100 plus 200 and so on. But if you compute it after 10 years, then after 10 years, you get a value which you consider with calculating the new value, and you get the green curve, which is no longer a straight line, but it consists of two straight lines. If you do it every fifth year, then you are doing more computations. at time 0, at time 5, at time 10, at time 15, at time 20, and you get four straight lines, and they are becoming higher and higher because you are doing more calculations, you are becoming, in a sense, more accurate. Curve number 4, during the computation every year, you see is this curve here, which is again different. If you now compute it every half a year, then it will change a bit, but less and less. The changes are less and less as you are making the computation period smaller and smaller. And as I showed you 1 hour ago, with the simulation model that we had for the virus infection without bounds, without having a limited number of computers to infect, the smaller we make the time step, the more accurate the computation became. But at some point, we couldn't distinguish anymore by making the time step smaller. So now back to the default simulation algorithm, which was developed by the great Swiss mathematician Euler, and that's many centuries ago. So even at that time, one did some computation, of course, by hand. And that was about how to compute numerically an integral. So step one, set initial value of time equal to start time. Step two, calculate the initial values of the levels. Step three, calculate all the auxiliaries. Here we have more detail than in the previous model, so that's why we have in between the auxiliaries. Then four, calculate the net flow of all levels, so it is the sum of all the inflows minus the sum of all the outflows. Then you add the time, the new time is the old time plus the time step, and then you add the net flows to the old value of the level to get a new value of the level, and then you go back and do the same thing again and again and again until you have finished the computation, that is, come to the final time. Now, about the time step. Basically, what you are doing with time step is approximating a smooth curve by putting the area of rectangles below. You are supposed to calculate the area below the curve. You approximate that by putting rectangles that touch it like this. And obviously, the smaller the width of the rectangles, the smaller the time step, the more accurate the computation is. So compare the left-hand side, which is quite accurate, with the right-hand side. The error is what you leave out. So if you have a big time step, this is missed, this triangle, this is missed, and this is missed. Whereas if you are doing with smaller time step, only the small things are apart. So as you make this time step smaller and smaller, you are reducing the computation errors. And the procedure that I told you to use is what is depicted here as the time constant rule. Use a time step. Okay, I have to explain that. Less than half of the smallest time constant in the model. In your model, you will have typically some time constants, given by some delays or some adjustment times. Never start with a time step that is bigger than about half of that, because it is certain that the numerical computation is going to be wrong, because such time constants are important for the accuracy. Then, if you are seeing that your model has some very strange behavior, sharp and yak oscillations, probably you have a balancing loop that's simulating incorrectly because the time step is too big, and then you should apply the alpha gain rule. And the alpha gain rule is based upon checking visually the curve, run the model, and then make the time step half, compare, and look for the pattern of behavior. And when you nothing more changes by making the time step half as big as the previous step, then you have achieved visual accuracy. Of course, the alpha gain rule is just a recommendation. You could also take the third again rule, so making it ice stamp one third at a time and so on, and stop when you don't see changes. The advantage of using the alpha gain rule is that Vensim has an inbuilt solution for that. So as I showed you in Vensim, here, so you have here model settings, and the time step is set to 0.5 here. But I could put any value here. I can put 0.1, for instance, and simulate. With that, and so. So the time step you can determine as you like, but normally in Vensim, so you have proposals for time values here, and you select something there. And then half of it, until the model doesn't change anymore. Okay. So how much time do we have left? 9 minutes. Go back to the lecture. Okay, these are just the recommendations. Here you see some examples of bad time steps. Here you have a model in the top that has a balancing feedback loop, and there is some time constant. The time to adjust is a time constant, and it has the value 0.25. If the time step is 0.4, then you get these sharp Yak oscillations. You have to reduce the time step, and then here you get a smooth behavior. So that shows you an example of a very bad initial choice of time step. Now, as to an advanced computation method. There are some models that are strongly non-linear in mathematics. And these models can be difficult to simulate exactly using the Euler method. So the model that you see here is a model where you are simulating what happens in an area, say in an island, where you have rabbits and you have some predators, say wolves. And the rabbits are the main food of the wolves. And the main cause of death of the rabbits is that they, sooner or later, are eaten by some wolf. So what happens there is that you have, this is a very simple model known as the Lotke-Volterra equation, and that is quite a good approximation to what happens where you have a relation between one predator and a prey. In this model, if you try to simulate it with the Euler's method, you get instabilities. Even if you choose very small time steps, it still is unstable. And the reason is there are numerical inaccuracies that are reinforced. So for every step in the simulation, this becomes more and more inaccurate. So you need to choose a Runge-Kutta model to make this stable. And I think I have the model. Let me see if I have it here. I think I had it. So actually I should find it here. No, I don't find it here. I wanted to show that. No, I don't have it here, but I will find it and show it to you later. Basically, what you have to do then is to change the simulation method, and that is done here, model, settings, And when you see here integration type Euler, you select Runge-Kutta. And there are different kinds of Runge-Kutta models, simulate integration methods. In VensimPLA, it does not give you more choices, so you have to choose the fourth order Runge-Kutta method. And I think this is explained here. No, it is not further explained. So, if you are interested in learning a bit more about the Runge-Kutta method, I'm sure that in Wikipedia you will find an explanation. So, let's look it up. Runge-Kutta, that is called because there were two scientists that developed that. Runge was German and Kutta was Indian. Runge-Kutta methods. Developed by the German mathematicians Runge and Kutta. I think this is wrong. I think Kutta was Indian. Let me see. No, German one. Sorry. I'm making Indian. Okay. Kutta was German nevertheless. And then it explains you all the things, and there is some mathematics as to how this is done and so. But if you are mathematically curious, here it is, the explanation as to that. If you want to know more about the Euler method, then you put Euler method, and here it tells you how this is done, and so on. Okay, so I think that's more or less as much as I could cover today. Okay, where I am? Euler method. Yes, the last slide is 92. Which explains the relation between a Venzi model and calculus. And there you can see the savings, here called S, is the integral of the interest, and the interest is the derivative of the savings over time. And the interests are calculated like this, and the initial value of the savings is 100, and R, which is the interest rate, 0.10. So, whenever you see stock, that is basically an integral. Whenever you see a flow, that's basically derivative. And the auxiliaries are intermediate calculations. Okay? So that's as far as we come today concerning the lecture. So I stop now. And in 5 minutes, we start with the exercise.